Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 77, titled The Enlightenment of the Buddha.
The Buddha was in the land of Magadha, somewhere in India near the middle of India, an important kingdom at that time, in a state of purity at the site of enlightenment. Actually, at the Bodhi, he's under the tree of enlightenment, actually. He's under a tree like a shaman, actually, sitting under the tree of enlightenment, having just realized true awareness. The ground was solid and firm, made of diamond, adorned with exquisite jewel discs and myriad precious flowers, with pure, clear crystals. The ocean of characteristics of the various colors appeared over an infinite extent. They were banners of precious stones, constantly emitting shining light and producing beautiful sound. Nets of myriad gems and garlands of exquisitely scented flowers hung all around. The finest jewels appeared spontaneously, raining inexhaustible quantities of gems and beautiful flowers all over the earth. There were rows of jewel trees, their branches and foliage lustrous and luxuriant. By the Buddha's spiritual power, he caused all the adornments of this enlightenment site to be reflected therein. This is creativity. The tree of enlightenment was tall and outstanding. Its trunk was diamond. Its main boughs were sapphire. Its branches and twigs were of various precious elements. The leaves spreading in all directions provided shade like clouds. The precious blossoms were of various colors. The branching twigs spread out their shadows. Also, the fruits were jewels, edible jewels, containing a blazing radiance. They were, together with the flowers, in great arrays. The entire circumference of the tree emanated light. Within the light there rained precious stones, and within each gem there were enlightening beings, like angelic bodhisattvas, in great hosts, like clouds, simultaneously appearing. Micro angels, micro bodhisattvas. Also, by virtue of the awesome spiritual power of the Buddha, the tree of enlightenment constantly gave forth sublime sounds, speaking various truths without end. You see, this is the Buddha mother of all beings, spreading the exquisite nurturing membrane of emptiness, which is ultimate absolute reality, inconceivably spreading, which is inconceivably a nurturing membrane that fits every macro and micro configuration of every form of differentiated life with ultimate nurture of beauty, truth, and goodness. He is spreading this womb of ultimate reality, which is his body, in the form of his womb body, which is infinite also, which therefore is enfolding all beings, enfolding them within their own Buddha potential, as embryonic Buddhas themselves, not as somehow dependent upon himself, because he feels one with them, and he knows that what they need is to realize they are one with him. And therefore, this membrane is completely enfolding all of them, infinitely, not just on the one planet, not just in the one place or the one Bodhi tree, but infinitely, throughout the universe, across the space, cosmic space, with the speed of light, beyond the speed of light, instantaneous, you know, spooky action at a distance, as they call it, the quantum people. Spooky meaning holy spooky. Also, by virtue of the Tree of Enlightenment constantly gave forth sublime sounds, speaking various truths without end. The palace chamber in which the Buddha was situated, his womb, that is, his emptiness, absoluteness womb, was spacious. It's not just him, the body, an enveloped being sitting under a tree, different from things around him. That's just a form, still maintaining, because that's helpful for some to perceive as a doorway to the vastness, the infinity of the Buddha presence. It extended throughout the 10 directions. It was made of jewels of various colors and was decorated with all kinds of precious flowers. The various adornments radiated lights like clouds, and the masses of their reflections from within the palace formed banners. A boundless host of enlightening beings, angelic bodhisattvas, the congregation at the site of enlightenment, were all gathered there. By means of the ability to manifest the lights and even inconceivable sounds of the Buddhas, they fashioned nets of the finest jewels, from which came forth all the realms of action of the spiritual powers of the Buddhas, and in which were reflected images of the abodes of all beings. And then he talks about their thrones and their radiance and, you know, oh yeah, at that time, I'll skip a little, the Buddha, the world honored one, in this setting, which he's maintaining the setting, he's maintaining the appearance of still being the individual being, separate from others, who was a prince and a king and then a yogi and then became a Buddha, so that beings can relate to that as a doorway of their own becoming, their own selves as human beings, you know, male and female, young and old, whatever, being able to find their own Buddhahood, in other words. So he maintained himself that present for a while. Not forever but on this planet, but for a while. At that time, the Buddha, in this setting, attained to supreme correct awareness of all things. His knowledge enter, I would translate, realistic awareness of all things. His knowledge entered into all times with complete equanimity. His body filled all worlds. His voice universally accorded with all lands in the 10 directions. Like space, which contains all forms, he made no discrimination among all objects. And as space extends everywhere, he entered all lands with equanimity. That's the spreading of that shunyata karuna garbham, emptiness, the womb of compassion. His body forever sat omnipresent in all sites of enlightenment, because he repeated this in every humanoid world. There are infinite numbers. Carl Sagan needn't have worried with his seti. There's trillions of human worlds, endless numbers, infinite numbers of them, everywhere. And my mind, we can know that and can visit there. And with enlightenment, we are aware and present there. Among the host of enlightening beings, his awareness light, his awesome light, shone like clearly, like the sun emerging, illumining the world. The ocean of myriad virtues which he practiced in all times was thoroughly pure. He's also present in all time, in the past, present, and future. He goes backwards into every element of time, changing the past, actually. It's not impossible to do at all. The ocean of myriad virtues which he practiced in all times was thoroughly pure, and he constantly demonstrated the productions of all the Buddha lands, their boundless forms and spheres of light extending throughout the center of the entire cosmos, equally and impartially. He expounded all truths like spreading great clouds. Each of his hair tips was able to contain all universes without interference, in each manifesting immeasurable spiritual powers, teaching and civilizing all sentient beings. His body extended throughout the 10 directions, yet without coming or going. His knowledge entered into all forms, and realize the avoidness of all things. All the miraculous displays of the Buddhas of past, present, and future were all seen in his light, and all the adornments of inconceivable aeons were revealed. So here is his spread through all time. You know, in every version of Buddha's biography, there's this thing that before he becomes fully enlightened under the Bodhi, under the tree of enlightenment, he remembers infinite previous lives of himself. And then you wonder, well, how come he didn't do that before? And other beings can realize a few previous lives, but very few can realize infinite previous lives, as he did. And, you know, I had this eureka moment a few years ago where I realized, why was he able to do that? Why don't we remember our previous lives? Because we suffered in our previous lives. We suffered death out of that just past one. We had many sufferings in the previous life, and so on, back infinitely. So just like we have it's a huge human thing, like when you go into shock or when you have a bad injury, after a while you don't remember the agony and the pain. And so we don't want to remember those things. But nirvana means realizing that the uncreated is the infinite, nurturing, compassionate womb of reality, bringing, making manifest the bliss of all life already, not later, but already. When you realize that, you realize retroactively that when you were suffering in past lives, even in hell, you were actually in bliss, and your ignorance was making a hell around yourself, was making yourself into a terrible struggle, was making yourself into terrible grief and horror and anger and fury and pain and so on. So you get a double vision about your own past. So then you can critique. You automatically see through your ignorance-driven perception of your past as suffering. So you actually realize that your past is different than you thought it was. Even your death was only your bliss. Death is only where you expand in bliss, actually. So there's nothing, that's deathless. That's why he said that reality was deathless. That door, the death-like door, which the ego-centered person sees as death, which is giving of oneself, the death-like door, portal, into creativity is actually not death. It is just vast opening. And it opens to the reality of the infinitely available energy of the Great Mother, of the Great Mother of Transcendent Wisdom, which is infinitely available, which at Menlo we all sleep in. Right? Did anybody? I hope everybody slept in the clear light who was here yesterday. You don't sleep in a dark nothingness, even though you do in it, you sleep hopefully in a dark room. And you close your eyes and you don't hear anything. But your cells and your being falls into beneath the darkness or within the darkness is the clear light, the diamond clear, infinite energy field of the infinite womb of the Great Mother Buddha, the Great Enlightened Mother. Now, second point in this one is, we still have time, tiny bit. Second light is the concept of Samantabhadra. Samantabhadra means total goody-goody. Samantabhadra means. Samanta means thorough going all around. Bhadra means good. I won't digress. Because I don't have time. So Samantabhadra is this bodhisattva, a particular type of bodhisattva who, like Manjushri and Avalokiteshvara and Tara, etc., is actually a Buddha, but he then manifests as a bodhisattva to appear everywhere to beings to help them. And his particular, he's like Ant-Man. He's the Ant-Man of bodhisattvas. You know that movie, Ant-Man? Oh, you don't read comics, you guys are so highfalutin. But they made a movie. They made a Marvel movie about him. And it was quite fun. I mean, for childish people like me, anyway. And that means that he goes in the micro world. You know, the vision of this non-obstruction of thing and thing, based on the realization of the non-obstruction of absolute emptiness and total relativity, sees the entirety of the infinite universe in every atom within that infinite universe. It's a holographic vision of reality. So Samantabhadra is the bodhisattva who is holographically present in every universe, in every atom. And even in each universe in an atom, the atoms of that universe in the atom have universes in their atoms. And even those atoms of that universe there have universes in their atoms, and so on and so on. And Samantabhadra is everywhere in them. Although, of course, at some point, right, like the wave-particle paradox, you lose track of a solid thing like an atom, because atoms dissolve under analysis also. They're just relational construct sort of levels of magnification. And then the wave becomes more flowing and more fluid. But you go infinitely to the microverse, infinitely to the macroverse. This whole universe here is only like a subatomic particle in a vast universe, of which this is a subatomic particle, and so on. teared up. And Samantabhadra is present like a holographic thing of infinite goodness present in every micro element of everything. So, for example, in every part of your body. So the yoga of Samantabhadra that you do is sort of realizing that your own, what are you made of? Are you made of atoms? Or you're made of molecules, you're told. But actually, you're not really made of molecules or atoms. That's just a level of magnification about you. What you're really made of is light. Because the atoms are made up of photons and electrons and nuclei. And then those nucleuses are not solid, and then they get down to where they don't know what it is. You know, they get into the wave-particle paradox, they get into the uncertainty principle, where there is no such thing as objective reality of some solid, indivisible thing, which Buddha predicted thousands of years ago. This sutra predicts that thousands of years ago. When you, if you ever viscerally know that by becoming a Buddha, which everybody can do, and everybody is going to do, at some time, maybe not in this life, but whenever they do, it will be in all their lives. So no problem. So when they get into that, then they can shape out of the very constitutive, you know, inconceivable level of energy, of infinite. Remember that they've discovered, quantum people in their mathematics and things have this strange thing where they've discovered that a vacuum has infinite energy, mathematically. It's called the zero quantum infinite energy field or something. They have different words and names for it. And it's kind of, they don't quite get how that could happen, but it sort of pops up out of their equations. But it's perfectly same, because the clear light of the void is diamond infinite energy. The reason that you can't spot it easily is that since it's infinite, it doesn't need to do anything. It just kind of, it sort of vibrates there. It doesn't really need to vibrate either. But someone who approached it might feel it was vibrating. But therefore, it's there to be drawn on infinitely by any being, relational being, that has any kind of need. So this is the infinite goodness of the universe, actually, that it's there to supply of the Great Mother, that every cell of her body is there to supply every need of her nurturable children. Which they say Buddha is, that's what Buddha consciousness is, they say. The mother analogy, they also go to father thing. Somehow try to drag the poor guys along. But the mother is the bigger focus. So Samantabhadra is a way of the individual identifying with that, so that, for example, if I do a good thing, like I hold hands and say beauty before me, if I make a bow and prostrate myself on the earth to touch Mother Earth and to show my connectedness to her and to humble my sort of feeling of being independently floating up there somehow, and make a gift of, showing a gift of submitting to reality in a sense, being realistic because of trusting reality that it's goodness and it's nurturance and it's love. And so when I do that, I simultaneously imagine at first that myself in every universe, in every atom, in my body, which are have infinite universes in them, and there are infinite replicas of myself in there, like Samantabhadras, and they are also bowing at the same time. So I'm multiplying the merit and the power of my act by having it multiply microcosmically and holographically. Do you follow me? That's the yoga of Samantabhadra. And so and there's this beautiful thing where, which I like, where they talk about the enlightening being, universally good, entered into a concentration called the immanent body of the illuminator of suchness. Suchness means reality, that everything is not exactly itself, it's such as itself, because it's also the absolute. And therefore it's like a reflected, it's in the mirror reflection of a relative thing in the mirror surface of the absolute. So therefore it's only such as itself, in other words, like itself. It's illusory that it's really itself, and it's actually only like itself. So therefore, it's simultaneously absolute and relative. It's called suchness. And actually, it's a little tiny bit different in emphasis from what's called thatness, which means that you're aware of the relative having the absolute in it, whereas suchness means you're aware of the absolute as being manifest in the relative. So he calls it the immanent body of the illuminator of suchness, which is in all enlightened ones. It enters everywhere into the equal essence of all enlightened ones, and is capable of manifesting myriad images in the cosmos, vastly and immensely without obstruction equal to space. All the whirling oceans, here you meditate again, just for another 5 minutes. All the whirling oceans of universes flow along into it. It produces all states of concentration, samadhi, and can contain all worlds in all directions. The oceans of lights of knowledge of all the enlightened ones come from here. It can reveal all the oceans of all conditions everywhere. It contains within it all the powers and liberations of the enlightened one and the knowledge of the enlightening being. It can cause the particles of all lands to be universally able to contain boundless universes. It develops the ocean of virtuous qualities of all Buddhas and reveals the ocean of great vows of these enlightened ones. All the cycles of teaching of the Buddhas flow through it and are guarded and maintained by it and kept without interruption or end. And the teaching just means, the point of teaching is, that's the greatest thing that the enlightened mind can do for the unenlightened ones who think they're suffering. The bliss enlightened mind is get them to understand their bliss. So that for that, this teaching is required. Sometimes it need not be verbal. Sometimes it's a gesture. Sometimes it's just presence. But sometimes it's a light, sometimes it's a scent, sometimes it's a sound. The concept of teaching means that the learner then can open to their more realistic condition. And he goes on and he says, as in this world, the enlightening being universally good, Samantabhadra, entered this concentration in the presence of the Buddha. Thus, in the same way, throughout the realm of space of the cosmos, in all directions and all times, in a subtle, unhindered, vastly expansive light, in all lands visible to the Buddha's eye, within reach of the Buddha's power, manifested by the Buddha's body, and in each atom of all of those lands, there were Buddhas as numerous as atoms in an ocean of worlds, and in front of each Buddha were universally good enlightening beings, numerous as atoms in an ocean of worlds, each also entering into this concentration in the immanent body of the illuminator of thusness, in enlightened ones. Anyway, that's enough because we're going to stop for dinner. But that then leads to a moment in that chapter where the Buddha on this planet, in this world, he reaches out and he pats the meditating Bodhisattva Samantabhadra, who is in the illuminator of thusness of all worlds, in all atoms of every infinite world, and he pats him on the head. He touches him on the head, which is like a little bit, it's like affection, but it's also initiatory. But it's like a mother patting, cuddling her child, this little pat on the head. And then simultaneously in all the atoms and all the universes in infinite directions, all the Buddhas are patting the Bodhisattva on the head. Just patting on the head. I really like that. And then later in the sutra, in another session, maybe tomorrow or tonight, if we're going to have discussion, or if we stop the discussion, I can do that. There's a thing where one of the, not Samantabhadra, he's always around because he's in every atom, but another guy who's a human who's looking for teachers, he meets 10 goddesses, and one of them is Buddha's mother, Maya Devi, which means, Maya means the creative power, Maya. Rude people call her illusion power, but polite people call her magical goddess. And Devi means goddess. So the goddess of magical power, Maya Devi, and she's the mother of Buddha, of Siddhartha. You know. But she's simultaneously in many planets, gives birth to Siddhartha, and many, not just here, but she is also here. Anyway, he meets her, and she gives him a kind of teaching, which is really amazing. And I might read that later, if we have a chance tomorrow morning for a few minutes.